Quintessential with your hosts John Coot and Scott Martinez.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Quintessential with John and Scott. It's been a couple years maybe since we did an episode, but we're going to get back into it now after popular demand. So without further ado, I have to introduce my co-host, Scott Martinez. Hey, Scott.
Hey, John. I'm here.
I see you.
I see you.
That's, yeah. And I saw you in person fairly recently, but we'll get into that in a minute. So how you been?
I'm doing all right. It's been a good couple of years, but I'm glad to be back here.
Well, I was listening to some of our older episodes, I noticed that we typically started talking about how Leicester is doing.
True.
What a difference a couple of years makes. Leicester is not even in the Premier League anymore.
They're not, but they will be back.
Okay, good. That's good.
It's a short-term thing, so they'll be back.
For those that relied on this podcast for their Leicester news, I'm sorry to inform everyone that they're in the Championship League now, but right. That's not
the leaders of the championship. They're well ahead at the moment.
Oh, good. Well, yeah, they're the best of the second best group of teams.
Exactly.
Okay, good. Well, that's something to be proud of. So, anyway, without further ado, it's overdue, obviously, that we've not recorded a podcast in a while. But
I'm sorry for all you out there. Yeah, but, you know, things happen.
Yeah, things happen. They do happen. And but I was really motivated to get this started again in the last couple of months due to the fact that I'm so proud of you for what you've been doing lately and in your your hobby vocation or whatever, which is you've really stepped up your game in creating, producing and performing music. Should be no surprise to our listeners based on some of the earlier episodes, your love of music going way back to our youth. But you are currently performing and you've got a ton of music produced on Spotify, but I'm getting ahead of myself. Let's talk about your love for music for a second and what led to what you're doing right now. What's the earliest you remember sort of realizing you really loved music?
I've been thinking about it, and I remember having my snare drum. You remember my snare drum?
I do.
And just being five or something or less and watching Batman. Na 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 Batman, yep. And I would hit my snare drum and sing the Batman theme song while drumming to the Batman theme song, and regularly enjoyed doing that. I had the drum in my living room or in front of the TV, and ready to go as soon as Batman started.
So you had to actually wait for the show to start.
To sing the song, the theme song, I did it in unison.
You didn't have a record of the theme song.
No.
If you missed the beginning, you might have been bummed because you were. It's only one chance a day, maybe. You know?
Exactly. Well, you know, those were the days.
So that's an interesting.
We had one shot.
I also think you used to have a drum
bongos
practice pad. Did you ever have one of those practice pads? I think you might have.
I don't recall. I do remember having bongos.
You had bongos.
Yes. And I remember being in writing songs, and I know you know one of them because I think I played it for you or sang it for you, or which was Planet Baldy. And I remember I was singing it. There were just songs I didn't paint up. Like another song called Race Car, and it was just about a race car. It was like stream of consciousness writing. But so in fact, I was singing Planet Baldy, which was based, I guess, on Planet Claire of the B-52s, the idea of having a planet to sing about.
Mm.
But since we have Mount Baldy here, I accidentally said Mount Baldy. So I've said Mount Planet Baldy.
On the cassette. I remember.
You remember that?
I'm not sure if I was present, but I might have been present when it was recorded.
I don't think you were. I think I was doing it on my own in the garage.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense. I do remember that. I think the theme, it's not a song, but it's a tune for the Scott Martinez talk show. Was you made that up? You made that up.
Correct. That also just came out like that.
Yeah. Yeah.
But we started off with the Twilight Zone theme for that. Scott Martinez.
That's true.
And then whatever sound we came up with to end it with, which I think was inspired by the Muppets,
maybe, and farts sometimes.
Well, yeah, a lot of farts, noise, fake fart noises. But it was a random sound that we came up with just to end the song with. But it was different each time, unless it was again another fart. But it necessarily wasn't in like per episode a fart.
Yeah, yeah. Well, before we got into K-Rock heavy in our teenage years, I think we were. Both of us, and maybe everybody, was listening to the Mighty 690, right?
Right. I mean, as a child, top 40 music is what you get first given. The radio, and you have the top 40 music. So
yeah,
that's pretty much what you get introduced to, and then you listen to music, and you decide what you like and what you don't like. But it took a while. We did listen to plenty of Journey and Foreigner.
We did. Nothing wrong with that. But the taste obviously matured later, just a few years later. But into alternative, K-rock, new wave, things like that.
Which I think I'm partly was inspired by my brother as well. Him being much older and listening to that music on his own already.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Yeah. Good thing, too.
Yeah.
Good thing he wasn't a massive, like, Blue Oyster Cult fan or something.
Or Dream Theater.
Dream Theater. Marillion.
Exactly.
Whatever. But
I can't imagine that.
Yeah. So, and, you know, we were talking about this the other day, because I was telling my kids about your knack for quickly coming up with parodies of existing lyrics. And I wrote a few down in preparation for this just to make sure I had my thoughts clear. So they're usually just stanzas. They're not like the whole song.
Weird Al.
Weird Al. Good point. Yeah. But legend. But, yeah, things like the Starland Vocal Band's One Hit Wonder, Afternoon Delight, which the lyrics originally, I think, are Skyrockets in Flight, Afternoon Delight. And we didn't know at the time what the song actually meant, but now we do. Because it was hooking up in the afternoon. But you changed it to
Skyrockets in My Fly.
Afternoon Delight, which actually is probably closer to the meaning we didn't understand.
Exactly. I had no idea that I was so perceptive.
But the other morning I was I listened to Spotify and there's this stupid AI DJ. I don't know if you've seen that function yet.
No.
His name's DJ X, and he'll play music based on what you play. And
does he talk?
He does talk. He's like, hey, this is your DJ X. And it's pretty funny, actually. He'll go like, this is the kind of music you listen to on a Thursday. Let's go with New Order or whatever. He actually says all that stuff. It's pretty funny. Maybe it's just for Androids and cool kids like me. But anyway, 1999 came on. Prince, yeah. 1999. And I was in the bathroom getting ready. And I walked out to my Monica's home office because she's it's right there. And I go, oh, I was telling you the other night about Scott creating these parody lyrics. And so in 1999, there's the very first line of the song is, I was dreaming when I wrote this, forgive me if it goes astray. And then it goes, and what did you say?
I was peeing when I wrote this, forgive me if it smells real bad.
Yeah. And that is literally stuck with me, like, every time I've heard that song, ever yeah, well, since.
He should have written it that way.
Yeah.
But yeah, I just, I don't know what it's, what it, I still do it constantly. I did it this morning with Nina, my daughter. I don't, it was something to do with the dog and driving. Oh. But he was being very nibbly. But so, I can't remember exactly what it was that I said. But it, I do it constantly.
It wasn't anything regarding urinating?
No, no.
While you're riding?
No.
Well, here's one of the best ones. And this is where I'll end it here, unless you can remind me of some that I forgot. But so in 1987, in the summer, I went to Mexico with a couple guys from my grade, and one of them was this guy Phil or Felipe, and we were all, you know, everybody was all into the same kind of music, all those guys too, like Smiths and stuff. And there's this
right, but he was from Mexico. He is of Mexican descent as well, was he?
That's
not?
True. That's true. Right. Actually, his
it's pertinent to the story.
When I went to Mexico, his family was actually living in Mexico City. His parents were, because his dad was an executive with an airline. And so I go to Mexico for a week or two or whatever it was. And around that time, off the Queen is Dead album, Frankly, Mr. Shankly was a song. And in that song, there's this line from Morrissey. This is, sometimes I feel more fulfilled making Christmas cards with the mentally ill. And out comes out of your mouth, like, the most elaborate parody ever. You want me to say it?
I can do it. Okay, sometimes I feel more like Phil using pesos instead of dollar bills.
Exactly. Which is crazy. Anyway, you got any other you remember?
We had the heat lamp one, which you brought up the other day.
The heat lamp one. Yeah, we'll let that one go for now.
Right.
But that was a
but good I did one. It throughout my life. I mean, people at work knew me for doing that as well.
Well, just, I'm not going to go into the story about who it's about, but I think anybody who's curious now about the heat lamp thing, it's a parody on the B-52 song Strobe Light. So imagine what they're talking about in strobe light, but doing it under a heat lamp instead. And then we'll leave it there. Yeah. But so anyway, I mean, so all that being said, it's clear that, you know, you've always kind of like, you've really, you know, gotten a kick out of playing with music and whatnot. And then, you know, throughout the 80s, you know, we went to a number of concerts, which we've talked about. And then we got into industrial and sort of darker alternative a little bit, which we'll kind of cover in a minute. But, you know, let me ask you this, like, and so, you know, just to not hold people in suspense, you know, you've got a collaboration with a guy, and we'll go into detail more later, but I just want to make sure people understand why we're going, what we're doing here, is you've got published music under a collaboration with another individual called Weekend Fixers, and you've also got stuff on Spotify under your name, Scott Allen Martinez. And all of that is kind of in the, I would call it, gothy techno industrial wave genre, right?
Yeah, I mean the stuff under my name is less. It has some undertones of that, but it also has some more. I mean, the album itself is more of a quote unquote lo-fi sounding, which just means not super highly it's electronic
highly produced.
Yeah, it's electronic, but it's not like super in depth. It's more lo-fi. And so, but that, so there are songs on that that are, that I sort of span the genres of things. There's songs that are more techno-y sounding, or, and then there's songs that are more, you know, gothic or whatever mm-hmm. sounding, or dark wave sounding, and there's some that are more poppy sounding. So that album actually has an array of different sounds to it, whereas The Weekend Fixers is more specifically in the dark wave realm of of music.
Yeah, so before we get to some more of that, I wanted to ask you, you know, there is a funny story about me attempting to quote unquote remix a Knights of Reb song on my CD player one time, where I just go hit back a few times and then created anyway. But when was the first time you got like an electronic, we had some of those Casio, maybe little keyboard things, but maybe that counts. But what was your first like electronic instrument like that you owned?
You know, I can't remember the name of it, but I remember once I was out of college and I was making more money and my rent was really low, and said that's when I bought my season tickets for the Angels. I spent money that I should have probably saved, but I bought a $3,000 keyboard that was awesome. And with that, I found the ways to record it onto the same computer I'm still recording onto, which was a PowerBook, which is now 18 years old. So it was about 18 years ago, I guess.
You didn't have a drum machine before that?
I did actually have it. You're right. With Mike Goodicke. I did have a drum machine that Mike Goodicke and I made some songs together. But he was more of the person that was, well, it's kind of the way it is now too, because he was more of making the music, and I would write words sometimes to that music. But also I was good at programming the drum machine. So, cause you had to like tell it when to make the beats go and when to change the beats and whatever, but you did it manually programming each thing. It's like, you do it now, then bam, bam, bam. So you had to program it in on the machine, and then you hit play and it would play it back. And so I was good at doing that. So I would program the drum machine as well, the beats in the drum machine. And then he would use his keyboard to make the music, whatever. And then I would write words and sing a little bit.
Did you guys actually record anything?
We did record it. I mean, it was just for our listen pretty much. And maybe, you know.
You still have it?
No, I don't have anything. Like, we don't have our talk shows. We don't have anything.
I know that's a little different.
I mean, we were a lot younger.
Cassette tape. But
I don't know if the technology was that different then. I don't think we were recording anything more than a cassette tape then either.
Oh, really?
Maybe it was onto a... No, I don't think it was just on a cassette. I don't know that
not
we...
Not an MP3 or anything?
No, I don't believe so.
Okay. Well, that's... Maybe he's got it. But anyway, So
we did do that, but that, and that was for, I mean, it always had been for fun in general. I just enjoyed doing it, and I would just find, you know, start playing around with the music until something just came that sounded like it was working, and then I would work it into making a song out of it. And so it was more, you know, just for fun. And it wasn't until the year before that, the end of 2022, where I said, you know what, I've been doing this for so long, I want to actually record a full album. And I Googled on how to put stuff on Spotify or whatever and realized it wasn't that difficult.
Mm-hmm.
And so I decided, you know what, I'm going to make a whole album out and put it up on Spotify. So that's when I started writing Multifarious, which was the name of the album that I released in early last year on my own.
Yes. And it's Scott Alan Martinez, all lowercase.
All lowercase, yeah. Well, it's funny because the thing I used to put And for some reason, I put Scott Allen Martinez in uppercase and in lowercase. And when the music came out, I had somehow done it in the lowercase version. It came out, and so I was like, okay, lowercase. But I've always prefer. I don't like to deal with hitting, you know,
shift
and or
that's a problem
or a cap lock. I can't type.
It's a waste of a lot of time. No kidding.
And so it was easier just to not deal with that anyway, and just keep my name lowercase.
I see. I always just thought it was you're lazy.
Well, I mean that's,
but
part of what I just said. But, but also,
but it does have a distinctive look, though.
Right. It does have a gives it. This stands out slightly lowercase.
Yes. Yes, it does. So, and so wait, backing up a second. You purchased a $3,000 what synthesizer?
Yeah.
What year was this?
That's a good question. About
like 10 years ago?
No, it was about 20.
That's a lot of money.
Years ago? Yeah, I know it was. But like I said, I had I was working. I was just a PA.
Right.
But I would make
good money.
My rent was $675 a month, and I made more than that in a week.
Right.
So
over there off of Burnside.
Sorry, it was on Cochrane.
Cochrane. Your rent was 600 and something a month.
675. Yeah.
Oh, I'm sure that place now is like $3,000 or something.
But even when I was there, they couldn't only raise it slight bits.
Oh, that's because of rent control.
And so my rent was always a lot cheaper than a lot of people's rent there because
you shouldn't have moved.
Yeah, I know.
Well, anyway, I remember going over there once, and I think you had some stuff set up in that main room.
Right.
But so you still have that synthesizer?
No, I ended up having to sell it when I had kids.
I see. So what are you using now?
So now I have a mini Moog. Not a mini Moog, but a mini, what am I looking for?
Synthesizer, keyboard?
Or yeah. Whatever? Well, I have a couple of small keyboards and a drum electronic drum set that I use.
Oh, I've seen that, yeah. But okay, fair enough. So we talked about how you put out multifarious.
Multifarious, yeah.
Yeah, that's about a year ago now, right?
It's a mini Korg, by the way. That's what I was looking for—the word Korg, not Moog, but mini Korg. Okay. But yeah, it was.
About a year ago, right?
About a year ago.
Okay. And then after that, and you know, correct me, then you started trying to you were starting to network in the indie music community, get your album out there. It started getting on some different, was it blogs or message boards or something? You started meeting other folks. Was it a podcast? Or was it more of a produced show of exposing other people? How did that you did this thing where you were exposing other people like yourself through interviews and whatnot, right?
Yes. What happened was, so I have this album I made,
right,
and
right.
You want people to hear it,
right? Sure.
And so I went to Facebook and I just typed in different things about indie artists or. So I found a bunch of pages for people with music, and so I was trying to put it on there, but all you ever get a lot of times is maybe someone will click on it to listen to it, but the odds are not that great. But secondly, you get a lot of things saying you pay me X amount of money, I'll get you all these plays on whatever, on Spotify and whatnot. Pay for play sort of thing where it's like, and so I got sort of frustrated with that. So I decided that there's a lot of us out there, people who just, indie small people who just made records.
Right.
But are, trying to get it heard. So I thought I would make first off just a Facebook page called Let's Be Heard, where we could promote our music ourselves. And make Spotify playlists and then say, on your Facebook page, promote the the playlist so that other people that listen, that go to your Facebook page, listen to that playlist, or your Instagram page, promote this playlist so people that go to your Instagram page may click on it. And so we could all help each other by putting right. our music on different, on a Spotify list and then sharing it within our social media and seeing if, you know, you can get people who listen to your music, listen to their music too.
Mm-hmm.
And from there, I decided to actually make a podcast for the Let's Be Heard Facebook page called Let's Be Heard Podcast. And mm-hmm. in that, I would use the same people, take their music and put it on the podcast. But also I would do interviews or have some sort of theme to the episode as well. And so I, you know, there'd be like an interview or something as part of the podcast, and then play all that music as well. And then the same thing, saying, now promote this on your Facebook page and your Instagram, whatever, and see if mm-hmm. we can get people to listen to all our music through this podcast as well.
Right, right. And was it there or one of these other sites where you met your soon-to-be collaborator that lives in Belgium? And what's his name?
His name is Jack Matthew Tyson is the name that he records under.
Okay.
And it was through the original Facebook page, actually. What had happened was I had made a playlist, and with Spotify, you can allow people to put their music onto it. You can make it open.
Mm-hmm.
So you can send them, you put a link up and people click on that link and they can put their own music on there. You don't need to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I put on all these Facebook pages, this is a playlist. This is the kind of music. I wanted to keep it genre specific to a certain degree because I felt like there was these playlists of random music. A lot of people want to be rap artists for whatever reason. That gets, you know, that's a thing. Right. And so I didn't want it to be full of all these different genres of music where it was so jumbled up that no one wanted to listen to it because it was like you didn't know what you're getting next. So I tried to keep it genre specific and said, you know, if you meet this genre specific requirement, put your music on and share it and we'll all help each other out. And so Jack Matthew Tyson put one of his songs on there, but also reached out to me and said, you know, this is really cool. I like what you're doing. As a thank you, I do remixes. Let me remix one of your songs. And so he took a song I had called It's Not the Same as It Was, and mm-hmm. he remixed it.
Mm-hmm.
So I sent him all the different sounds separately so that cool. he can.
Yeah.
And it's funny because me using my old technology, everything I had was all, I sent him all MP3s of the different tracks.
Okay.
Because it was just on Bandcamp. But he has newer technology. He uses what's called a DAW. And it's works totally different. And so he had to figure out a way to use my MP3s to put it on there and remix it. But he did it all. And he did a great job. And so we were talking. It was like, you know, we should just try and do something together as well. Make our own song. Mm-hmm. And so we decided to try and do that. And so what he did was, and how it all started, was he has his DAW, and he calls them ideas, but he made like a little, maybe 15-second thing of just some little bit of music that sounded like whatever. And I listened to it. And I put it onto my computer and just sort of like kept expanding it. So we made it a minute long or so.
Mm-hmm.
And I sort of just listened to it and felt like what it was saying to me as far as what it felt like and what I can. And I wrote some lyrics to it and sent it back to him. And he took that and then just put the whole song together. And our first song was a song called Things Just Happen.
Without getting into the nitty gritty, I mean, I know enough about mixing and stuff, MP3s and files from doing podcast stuff, but when you record your voice to his tract, or you know, his piece of music, is your voice as an isolated MP3 that doesn't have any like any music in the background, so he could easily just put it wherever he wants?
Yeah, with GarageBand, you have what they call tracks.
Right.
So the one track was the music that he had sent that I had expanded, and then the next track was my lyrics. And then what I would do is I sent him the version with both the music and lyrics, me singing, and then also separately just the me singing part. So because the fact that it was just a little bit of music, I was putting a song together. So there were certain ways I was singing the song that I wanted him to hear with the music, so that he knew that this is how I wanted it to go, and then change this way and whatnot. And so I wanted him to hear it with the music, so that he had an idea of what I was thinking when I was singing the lyrics and putting them together. But then I also sent him without, so that he could put it all together as well.
So after that, I'm guessing you guys kind of both kind of said, okay, this is kind of cool, this is fun, it's working, whatever. And then, you know, as opposed to a one-off sort of like thing, you're now into the next phase, which is like, let's collaborate through and through on a song. Is that fair to say?
On a whole album. We did that song, Things Just Happen, and it went really well. I mean, it just clicked. And, you know, the music he sent, I really liked it. And it's like, wow, this song just came out really easily from me. And we put it out as a single, and we felt really good about it. And so we're like, let's just try it again. And so that was pretty much the process throughout the whole writing of the album. He would just send me like little snippets of some sound, you know, music. And I sort of listened to it and built a song around it, and then sent it back to him. And then we would collaborate. Once he listened to what I had sent to him and how I had put the song together, would put it together and then send me, you know, his first version of it. And I listened to it. And it's like, no, you know, this needs to go there, or this is how I wanted this part to sound. And, you know, we talk about it and adjust it until we were both satisfied with the end result.
Okay, cool. And that process is, you know, are you guys using Zoom or Teams or something to communicate?
Facebook Messenger.
Oh, Facebook Messenger. Pretty cool.
But sometimes I needed, because as you well know, and just in life, when you just text somebody, you don't quite necessarily get the context of what you're trying to say sometimes.
Sure. Yeah.
So sometimes I would do a voice memo so that I could sing it to him the way I wanted it to hear it, or tell him, show him the break I wanted it to have in the words. Because sometimes he would take it and feed it into his computer or whatever, and it wouldn't have the flow that I had originally had sung to it or planned for it. The words were just not quite a couple seconds off or half a second off or whatever. It's like, no, I need to space that piece right there so that it sounds the way I wanted it to sound.
If you hear any banging, it's because the office next to mine, I think, is getting some tenant improvements. So anyway,
I thought you were thinking or something like that. It sounds inside your head.
That is, yeah, that happens too. But okay, excellent. So when did and what's the name of the Weekend Fixers album?
Euphonious Fate or Feet. And it's funny because we really struggled at making an album name that we both liked. And it took a while, and I kept Googling things, whatever. And it took a little while for us to agree. But
he lives, I'm not sure we said that, he lives in Belgium, right?
Correct.
We've never actually met,
no.
In person, but okay. But you have done, so back to the, so yeah, you named it, name it, what's the name again? Eponymous Feet?
No, Euphonious Feet.
Euphonious Feet. Okay, got it. And that's on Spotify, right?
Correct.
And And then you guys even made a video, or is there more than one video?
There are three videos now. But that was the thing too. I mean, before we even worked on an album, we made that song and he made a video right quickly to it as well. He likes to do that with AI technology. And okay. But also I went into my daughter's room and recorded me singing with some lights on my face, whatever, so that we could mix the two together. So you see me, just my face, singing as well in the video.
That's right. That's right. So that led to, I guess, which is kind of the last part of this for now, of the Scott's musical journey piece is the live performances. And so I was at your debut in December of 2023 at the Whiskey A Go-Go, which is a really cool venue to kind of, because it's famous to have your first live performance where people pay and everything. And there's a bar and everything else, you know, it's like a real place. It's right. Like famous. It's just famous and stuff. And it's kind of funny because
it's well known around the world.
I'd never been there actually, which was kind of funny. So I'll always associate Whiskey A Go-Go with your performance there. And it was really fun. How did that come about? When did you decide, you know, I want to do this stuff live. I'm not going to just keep this in the internet. And I want to go out and show everybody.
Right. I mean, I'd always had a dream, I guess you could say, of, since he's in Belgium, of going over there and maybe we could do a tour together around.
You've always had a dream?
Since we started.
Okay, for a year now or so.
Yeah.
Okay, all right. For the last year, your dream has been to go to Belgium and perform live with him.
With him. And maybe okay, tour, good. You know, Belgium and Germany. And the music itself lends itself to that area. Here in
like
the U.S.
Like Rammstein.
Yeah. Here in the U.S., you know, this music is more of a... it's not top.
An acquired taste.
Yeah. This is more of a top 40.
Well, one of the most famous industrial bands ever is from Belgium.
Right.
Right? From 242, right? But
And so that was my hope. And so what happened was there was a band called Black Angel that was playing the Whiskey.
Right.
And through the Facebook pages, they had opening bands that fell through. And so they were looking for somebody to open for them. So I got in contact with them. And that's how I ended up with that gig.
Did they vet you first by at least listening to your stuff?
Yeah.
So you passed the test at least.
Yeah. He said, you know, your sound works well with ours. And it was just going to be, they were going to be the headliners. And then it was going to be two other bands that opened for them. One of them, which was me. And, but then the Whiskey got all weird and they wanted to have more bands playing per night or something. So they ended up taking that show and merging it with another show that they had going on, which was with bands of a lot heavier sound. Mm. So we started the night and then the other bands finished the night. So
right.
Black Angel wasn't the headliner, but they were sort of the pre-headliner.
Yeah, they were the OMD to Depeche Mode at the Concert for the Masses. They were the band that played before the final band, right?
Well, they were the band, like, it was sort of a subgenre night where the first couple bands were this sound, then that was over, the next night started. And so they were still, like, they still had their own room in the back, but it wasn't the headlining room, but it was the side room, whereas all the other bands, I shared the room with them because they were nice enough to say, you know, come in here and hang out with us.
Right.
Backstage.
Okay. So obviously, you know, it was your first time and we were there. What
was
it like?
Time ever performing live.
Yeah. So yeah. What was it like, logistically, like the, bringing your equipment, setting up and interfacing with the sound engineer, you know, never done anything like this before. So you, it's not just the performing, it's the literally making sure all this stuff works.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I had, since it was only me performing and my bandmate wasn't there, I tried to make it so that it would be interesting. It wasn't just me standing there singing on stage. So I did bring along with myself my a keyboard and my electric drum set that I modified to just have two pads and a cymbal only. And so I brought all that stuff in. It was raining, pouring rain. And at the Whiskey, you sort of load in right through the side door in the, off of Sunset Boulevard. So I brought my stuff in there. And the main band started doing their sound check. They set up all their stuff. And my friend Mike Brunsman was there with me. And him and I went and got a drink somewhere and came back. And since I was going to be the first band up, I was the last band to... What they were going to do was just a line check, which was making sure once I plugged in all the equipment, they were getting the sound. But I ended up doing a full sound check. So it was kind of fun. So, you know, you got to hear the music playing out in the empty venue, and I, you know, sang a little bit, and we measured all the sounds and put them all together so that it all sounded like they were mixing together well and working.
Got it. Okay. Yeah. And then you guys, and then you went on stage, and I thought it was really fun. I had really low expectations. Don't take offense, because I didn't know. But it, you know, if I hadn't known, I wouldn't have thought that was your first time, because you were very comfortable on stage and you did really well. Were you nervous?
It was funny. I practiced and practiced and practiced going into the show, so I was actually really nervous. I had this terror that I was just gonna stand there and not remember any of the words. So what I had also had done, since I
wait, don't tell me you pulled a Marsha Brady where you pictured the audience naked.
No.
Okay.
I didn't have to do that. They were
okay. That's right. Everybody except for me, which was awkward.
Yeah. Exactly.
But anyway, go on.
What I decided to do was, down the street from me, there was a bar that had open mic nights on Tuesdays. The show was on a Wednesday. So I brought just my backing track, which was on the computer there, and I sang a couple of the songs to this bar of people who don't listen to this type of music at all. But I told them what was going on. It's like, tomorrow I'm going to perform for the first time ever live. I wanted to at least sing in front of a crowd first, in front of people first, before I did that. And so I did it, and they were really very nice. And it... all my practice had paid off, I guess. It, you know, all the words came to me.
Yeah.
I felt fine about it. And so it helped going on stage. But when I got there, I was still really nervous. But like you said, I had all this time before I went on stage. So by the time I actually was announced and walked down the steps of the Whiskey onto the stage, I was completely fine. I wasn't nervous at all for some reason.
Well, you know, sometimes, you know, I've done a lot of public speaking, and I've been on stages where I'm like running a panel, or I'm the MC of something, and there's lights in your face, and the room might be dark or whatever. I mean, and sometimes I just don't even really see the audience that much. I mean, it's kind of a haze, or it's something. Maybe I don't know. Maybe it helps me not feel insecure about 200 people looking at me, that I just kind of,
they just associated.
Yeah. So could you like see my eyes? Because I was, you know, right 20 feet away. Like, were you just, was it all just a blur?
It was sort of a blur. The thing was, I had a job to do, and I sort of was just concentrating on doing that job instead of what was going on out in the crowd. So my forefront was just keeping myself focused on what I was doing. So I heard more than I saw. Like, right, I could hear someone saying something, cheering, whatever, but I wasn't really paying attention to what was going on out there as much. I mean, like, at times between songs or whatever, I could look out and yeah, see. But for the most part, I was just so focused that I really didn't pay attention to the people out there. I just sort of paid attention to what I was doing.
Did it go by fast?
It did.
Yeah. Well, it was 25 minutes, right?
Yeah.
And but it could for some people that could feel like 5 minutes, and some people it could feel like 2 hours. So it did it feel like 25 minutes? Or did it feel like,
no,
like 10?
It went by quickly, and it went smoothly. And it's funny because I have since performed once, a second time, at a club here, and it went smoother at the Whiskey with the sound, for one thing.
Yeah.
But there was also a moment at that show where I swear I was going to not remember. I was like trying to think of what I was. We do a cover of the Cure's Shake Dog Shake, and I decided to perform that at the second show that, yeah, I did. And as the song started and I was doing my things, I was trying to think of the first lyrics were, and my mind was completely blank. I was like, it better come to me when it comes time, which it did. Once I heard the part that introduced me to when I was supposed to sing, the words came. So all, yeah, the practice, you know, I always, when I practice, I paid attention to when I was supposed to start singing, what cues I had with the music.
Right.
The cues of the music helped me just split out the words. So it worked out fine. But there was a couple times where I thought, oh shit, I don't remember the words right now. Hopefully, mm-hmm, it comes when it needs to. And it did.
Yeah. Well, I saw that. I mean, so it's funny. I mean, so I went to the first show, obviously, and then I watched the show live on YouTube, the second one, and
right,
and it was clear. I mean, obviously, I have no idea what the layout of this place was like, but it was clear that the stage was like, I don't know, like 5x7 or something. I mean, so small, right? Like, and you had like very little to maneuver, as you know. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, it was.
Did that create a different dynamic for you in terms of your ability to relax? Or something?
It did, definitely. I felt boxed in. Right. And I felt, and that was when I was setting up, they were having problems with the drums getting they were getting some weird feedback, which I don't think was my cable, but they claimed it was my cable. But I turned it all off and unplugged it all, and they still were getting it, so I don't know how it could have been my cable. But so all that stuff threw me off. And so when I finally got everything set up and we were ready to go, I wanted to start the music when I wasn't on stage, but also I didn't have my jacket on, the clothes that I was going to wear for the performance. So I ran off stage to get my jacket, whatever, and I completely forgot my water and everything to bring back to drink. So that whole show, I was sweating and thirsty and dying, and I was like, oh. So I had a lot of stuff going. I mean, I was confined, and when I went to set it up, there was this big drum set on there. I was like, can we move that? And like, no, or whatever. So I was like, I don't have time to like deal with arguing with you about this stupid drum set. I'll just try and set up this little section that I have available to me. And so there was a lot of, there's a lot of things that really threw me off. And so, and the microphone, I didn't have, you know, the ability to move around as much as I would have liked to and whatnot. So, and I knew it was being recorded, so I didn't want to move out of where the camera would see me.
Right.
And so there was a lot of things that had going on in my mind that really threw me off in general. So I was thinking about a lot of things during the whole show, especially the fact that I was dying of thirst and sweating, and like, I wanted to just run off stage and go get my drink.
Right.
Or ask somebody to do it. I was like, I just got to power through it. So I powered through it, and it wasn't as good as the Whiskey. I don't think. I don't think I felt as comfortable or as free as I did at the Whiskey.
Was the whiskey recorded?
It was. I have audio only recording.
It's not on YouTube. Okay.
No.
That's too bad. That would have been cool. So and the next venue is and I'm not sure when this is going to drop. I'm going to guess it drops this episode's probably going to drop first week of March. We're in that, but over the next couple of days. But when's, so it'll be before your next show. So when's your next show?
My next show is April 5th.
Over a month from now. Okay.
Yeah.
April 5th at where?
Well, it's this club called Club Decades. Okay. It's in Hollywood.
All right.
And it's off Cherokee at some bar. They throw, there's an inside part and an outside part of this space, and I believe the stage is on the outside part of the venue.
Have you seen the? Have you gone and checked it out?
By LaBelle is the name of the venue. It says
it's one more time.
Borders by LaBelle. But if you Google Club Decades, the Eventbrite link will come up, and so it's April 5th, and it looks like there's some movie called Saltburn. They have like theme nights, and there's a movie called Saltburn, which I never really heard of. It came out last year, I guess, but it's like already an underground movie of some sort. And so that's the theme of the night for whatever reason. I've never seen the movie, so I don't know what that means.
Have you seen the layout of the venue like in person?
I have not.
You should probably do that.
Yeah.
Before you set up and stuff. That way you can get yourself mentally prepared for the whatever the setup's like, so you're not surprised if you're standing in a bucket or something.
Right. And the fun thing is, I learn from each time I perform so far. And so I change the show around. So the set I'm going to do for that, the songs will be in different orders. But also I've added some other fun things to it.
Oh, good. Well, hopefully that's on YouTube, but we don't know. Do they do that? Do you know?
I don't know.
Okay.
But you should just go there.
I'm definitely going to go, and it's 18 and over.
It's 18 and over, yeah.
Just like the whiskey was, but the last one wasn't, but
The whiskey was all ages, so Lainey and Nina were actually able to go as well.
That's true. But I brought my son, he actually drove me, which was he's 18, and my older daughter, Emily, was at the whiskey too. So, you know, I'll try to get as many people to go as possible. And then, of course, you know,
our listeners should go as well.
Our listeners should go. And
it's going to be a fun night, because you'd also, you know, you get to talk to us and hang out. And
hang out with Mike. And Sean was there.
I'll be out around talking to everybody. So if you come out,
I think
you got to say hello to me. And
you actually need me there, because I think it's well established that the best pictures from Whiskey A Go Go came from my phone.
I think it's been well established.
Everybody talks about it.
Exactly. Well, that's the cool thing about the whiskey show was we had a ticket that actually had the name of the band on it and everything too, which was fun.
And you were on the marquee.
Yeah, I was on the marquee as well.
That was super cool too. So, super exciting. It's super fun. And I think it's really, really cool that you put yourself out there like this. I don't think it's about money, but if you get a couple pennies from Spotify, that doesn't hurt, I suppose.
And okay, yes.
If you get a cut of any of these ticket sales, who knows? Maybe, you know, maybe you could play at the Doll Hut in Anaheim at some point. You know, that's a small place that plays weird, obscure bands.
Yeah, I've been trying to put it out there, and I've been looking for places and emailing places and whatnot. So I'm trying to get it out there, but it's fun, and I enjoy putting the sets together. I practice a lot, and for this next show, I put some more fun stuff in there, so it should be a cool show.
Are you and Mr. Tyson going to collaborate again?
Yes, we actually, the whiskey show, I did a song that's not available in stores. a new song. And I think I'm going to do that song again for this show. But we're still working on stuff. We have a couple of songs already made, and we have another one that we're working on. He's had some health issues recently, so it's been a little slower, but we're still working on stuff. So maybe if I can get this new song that I started done before the next show, I can premiere it there, but we'll see.
Excellent. Excellent. All right then. Well, glad we could find some time to talk about this and do this, and who knows, people, maybe it'll, begin a new era of the Quintessential Podcast. I think I have some other ideas. I've been meaning to get back into it. Nothing was inspiring me until this. It's kind of strange. I never thought I'd use inspire and you in the same sentence before. Anyway, sorry. No, I'm really proud of you. It's super cool that you're doing this. And I think it's a testament to people following their dreams or doing things where they find their joy, right?
Yeah, definitely. It's been a great journey, and it's been fun, and it's been something I've been wanting to do. So, you know, I really am excited, and finally being able to do the live shows has been great, and just putting the shows together, and each time trying to come up with something that makes it even better the next time.
Well, absolutely. So cool. All right, man. We'll put when we put the podcast out, well, people will be actually listening to it right now if they hear me say this. But if you look in the show notes, we'll provide links, the Spotify links to the Weekend Fixers album and your first album for people's listening ease.
Yes, and then also maybe the link to the upcoming show on April 5th.
There you go.
So you can find out how to get your tickets.
Perfect.
And come say hello.
All right, man. Well, good to see you. It's good. And we will get together soon
and do more podcasts soon. So be ready to listen.
All right. Take care, everybody. Bye.
Right, thanks. Right.
Brought by Treetop Studio in combination with Scott Martinez and Productions.
Or something. I don't know what's going on. Whatever. It doesn't matter.
Okay. I'll cut this part out. I hit start. Okay. All right. Hey, welcome to another episode of Quintessential.
With us, what's John and Scott.
What's this thing called? Quintessential Generation.
It's called Quintessential.
Okay, fine.
But yeah, it was Gen X for the cool people of the world / anyone. Okay. All right, I don't know. Fine. You're the right. Yeah, just Quintessential is fine.
Okay.